I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London, bluer still over Dortmund, and of course over Madrid.
Massive.
Jules. Okay, I go back to that Juanito quote. 90 minutes is a very long time at the bit of it. This whole thing with the comebacks, I mean...
They did it again, Gab, again and again and again. It's just never stopped amazing. Everybody, to be fair, even at the stadium, when you're there, you feel the energy. You feel that the stadium still believes, the players as well. But you say, like, this hasn't been their night. They missed chances. Bayern scored a worldie. It's just not going to happen again. Surely not. And yet another Serb with, like magic, really. Like Rodrigo against City 2 years ago. This time is Joselu. It's just incredible. I don't even think we have word for it. It's just what happens there.
And I think there's some symbolism as well in the one of Joselu goals, where it's Nacho to Rudiger to Joselu. I mean, this is like prime blue collar, lunch pail, no Galactico stuff.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. And also the drama with the VAR, because the goal was disallowed first and then we had to wait. We waited and the explosion of that stadium and obviously the players and everyone, when Mr. Marciniak, the referee, gives it, it's just incredible.
Oh, it's Mr. Marciniak now.
Well, I was
right?
Not sure if we should call referee with, like, you know.
No, we should. We should just call them by their names.
Okay,
we don't call
Marciniak,
him Mr. Kane.
But I didn't know what his first name was. I didn't want to say just Marciniak.
His first name is Simon.
Simon Marciniak
from Poland with a very large, I think he spends a lot of time in the gym.
In the gym, clearly.
The other big officiating call in this, let's get right to it. The one which angered Tommy T at the end.
And De Ligt and all the...
De Ligt, I can understand.
All the Bayern people.
Was the incident when... Which would end up in De Ligt scoring, although, as Madrid fans point out, the whistle goes before that, the fans, the Lunin stops and stuff. So we'll never know if he would have scored.
Yeah.
But the point here is it's a very tight offside, and the assistant referee puts his flag up straight away. Now, we're told, do not put your flag up when it's very, very close. Mm. On top of that, Marciniak, and if you watch the video, he's turning. He sees, as soon as he sees the flag, he has no idea if he's offside or not. But as soon as he sees the flag, he blows the whistle. And so when he blows the whistle, Real Madrid switch off.
Yeah.
It's an unfortunate confluence of events. I don't think there's any argument. The assistant referee made a really big mistake here.
Yeah, massively. I mean, Marciniak, again, too good to just do his name, apologized to Thomas Tuchel and to Bayern at the end. He said, please forgive me, all that kind of stuff.
Forgive you? You didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
The assistant.
Yeah, true. But I guess him as the leader of this team of four, I guess. But yeah, I just don't understand how now those referees have really experience. The linesman knows too well that you can't just flag so quickly, so early. You just had to let it go. And then you come back to it, like on the Joselu goal, basically.
Yeah.
So
I mean, Marciniak maybe could have waited to blow his whistle. I mean, again, if we want to go in hindsight, being 2020.
Yeah.
But Jules, I don't think this should take away from the fact that, in my opinion, Real Madrid go through deservedly, based on what we saw in the game, based on the number of chances, based on the fact that, you know, Manuel Neuer obviously making an enormous mistake for the equalizer,
but two
if you count, you know, throwing the ball out the
way
he did.
Why did you throw the ball with your arm?
And then
like
he drops it, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, Real Madrid could have scored three to that point, if not for the saves that Neuer made. And we were having this discussion beforehand. You said, well, he's a goalkeeper. You're supposed to be making saves. I don't think you're supposed to be making those saves.
So I mean, the only one really is the Rodrigo one that is outstanding.
The Vinicius one was pretty good, too.
Which one?
The one where Vinicius cuts inside and slams it, and he goes, I think, with his opposite hand.
Yeah, but that's... I think this one he can save. The free kick from Rodrigo he can save. The one from Vinicius, the cross that becomes a shot in the first half, I think he saves. The Rodrigo one is outstanding, and I even think he touches the ball maybe on the Vinicius strike that hits the post and then comes back onto Rodrigo. But yeah, you're right. The plan from Madrid was very simplistic, let's be honest, was give the ball to Vini, and then Vini is going to destroy Kimmich a right back, and then that's going to make the difference. I didn't see much else from this Real Madrid side than that, but Vinicius is in such great form and he's such a great player that it was enough on the night, although until the 88th minute, it was not enough, though, because Alphonso Davies scored a worldie in transition on the counter, like we said it would happen on Monday. And then that was it, really. It looked, to be fair, that they would get out.
It looked that way, but as forget we know, the power of the Bernabeu.
Exactly.
We're going to break this down further, and I disagree a bit with Jules' assessment. I mean, we have two managers who both can play in many, many different ways, but I think it became clear in the first 10, 15 minutes of the game that first half was going to involve Bayern playing mostly on the counter,
yeah.
Right? Mostly with the speed of Gnabry trying to release Kane, whatever. So Real Madrid at home, without pushing it,
yeah,
because they rarely do push it, right? But they said, okay, fine, we're going to play our game. It was a cagey first half, or even first half, let's say up until the hour mark or so. But I thought Real Madrid had the bulk of the better chances.
Yeah, yeah.
To that point. So I think we can say whatever they were doing was working.
Yeah, but the plan was just to give the ball to Vini.
They weren't getting anything right, but they were getting so much joy from that.
Oh, yeah, but that's fine. That's fine with me. I tweeted last night, it was the Vini show, and that worked perfectly.
But I think that also ties into some questions that can be asked of Tuchel and how he approached it. You know, because I it's not just like the issue of Kimmich in midfield. He's not a six, blah, blah, blah. Go back to playing right back. He puts him at right back, fine. But if you want to do that, if you can see that he's really struggling against Vini because, a lot of players struggle against Vini, but yeah, especially yeah. Kimmich, get him some help. Get him some help. Get somebody, sorry. I mean, Limer presumably.
Yeah.
And I thought they were very effective. And if you go back and you look at heat maps or not, part of the reason I thought that Bellingham was, wasn't so influential going forward is he ran himself into the ground and was often coming over to Vinicius' side to try to help. I mean, there was no question that was the overload that they were looking for, which then created space in the middle, which is part of what, we saw Valverde come inside and two or three shots, though.
The space in the middle for who? They had no striker. That's why all.
I think the plan was for Valverde to fill that space. Coming from that side.
It didn't.
But to that point, I mean, I think Real Madrid were on top. And that doesn't, in terms of chance of credit, doesn't mean they were going to score. When they were beaten, they were beaten by that worldie from Davies, and this really was a worldie. I'm not going to criticize Rudiger for showing Davies onto his weaker foot.
You're
in space, you're one-on-one with the freaking roadrunner. You're Rudiger. Hey, if you're going to beat me with your weaker foot.
And we find out
that Davies has a decent right foot as well.
I'm not sure he has. I think he can try another 99 times and he would not put it the same way. Great transition. That's all they could do anyway in that game. We've said it before. We said it on Monday, their game was all going to be on transition. I think once it goes 1-0 up, and it was funny because Tuchel, as the Bayern players are celebrating, Kimmich is in the middle of the pitch. Tuchel is like calling him, and with the noise, he can't hear him. And he's like moving his arm to get Kimmich's attention to say, we're going to go to a back five, so you're going to get the help that you need. But even before that, you see him talking to Kimmich and say, like, it's you now, it's you. If Vini doesn't do you again, then we have a chance here, we have a chance. And to be fair, where I think Carlo was great is that Vinicius played central in the first leg. He was central, he played, you look at his heat map, he played central. So Dier and Kim in that game, and we saw Kim obviously being done on the first goal, had to deal with him, not Kimmich. This time he was literally like last season, like when Benzema was in that team. He was by the touchline on the left, didn't move from there, or hardly move from there. And Rodrigo was the one more central, so the opposite to the first leg. Because I think they clearly thought this time at the Bernabeu as well, we're going to put him on Kimmich and he's going to destroy him. And he did. And to be fair, I don't know if at some point Tuchel, even mid-first half, should have swapped Kimmich and Mazraoui maybe. Would have Mazraoui made a difference? Against Vini, against this Vini, I'm not sure. So maybe go to a back five before, but nil-nil, can you go to a back five? I'm not sure either. So there's a lot of things. He goes 5 minutes after the first goal for a back five, and for 12 minutes, that's good, until the Neuer's mistake. And that's why I'm thinking, what if Neuer doesn't make that mistake? What if, instead of throwing the ball with his arm like he does, where he doesn't need to, kick it long, even if you're going to lose it, but at least you lose it in their side. Now you've lost it in your own half, where your players were pushing the block, four passes, Vini shots, he fumbles it, José Lu scores, and that's it. And after that goal, you could see in the stand, you could feel in the stadium, there's just no way back for Bayern, the body language, and then you know that Real Madrid, you know it's not even going to go to extra time that Real Madrid are going to score a second one.
Yeah, I'm not going to crucify Neuer for that mistake.
Why?
Because of the saves he made earlier. I think you had to balance out.
Goalkeepers, what do you mean balance out? Well, some keepers don't have a great game, and then some keepers have great games and don't make mistakes.
Yeah, I'm saying I'm not, like, if I had to make a list of the people responsible for this defeat, and by the way, when I say responsible, obviously there's credit to the other side. There's a reason why Real Madrid are so good and have so many great players.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bayern are third in the Bundesliga, right? So let's make no mistake about this, right? The outcome, Real Madrid winning, is what everybody would have, or most people would have expected when they said, ooh, who has the better team here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when I say who's responsible, when we look for things that Bayern could have done differently, I mean, if I line up, yeah, Neuer's part of it, but I would obviously have Kimmich in there. And you can say, well, Kimmich shouldn't have been put in that situation, which is why I would definitely put Tommy T in there. I would perhaps put the approach in there too, because if I have Musiala on the pitch and I don't get him the ball, I might as well not have Musiala on the pitch. What he's there for his pressing combinations and stuff?
He's great in transition. He's a great player. They can't get the ball off him. You cannot not play Musiala in a game like that where you're not playing transition.
No. I'm saying is, what if in Musiala and Kane, I have two players who are very good at dropping off, creating space, stuff like that, right? Why do I just play on the counterattack when...
But I told you on Monday, you can't go there and not play on the counterattack with the players that Bayern have. Because this is what
he's Tommy T, he's some kind of tactical genius.
But that's what they're good at. They're good at having Sané, Gnabry, Musiala and Kane and play on the counter. This is what they're good at. Why would they have gone there and played differently to what they're really good at?
Well, I might argue, mix it up a little bit more. I might argue, by the way, this is not how you get in most weeks in the Bundesliga. They don't sit back and play on the counter.
No, but they destroyed Dortmund this season playing on the counter, for example. Dortmund, they are in the Champions League final.
Dortmund, who are fifth in the Bundesliga.
They're in the Champions League final.
No, but I guess I was disappointed. I'm like, dude, if this is your last big stage at Bayern, maybe you could come up with something a little bit less predictable. Where he became unpredictable, 5 minutes from time, what does he do? Who are the two players he took? Well, we agree. We don't have a problem with Kim and going to going five at the back.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, again, Upamecano, I don't know how this guy feels, right? So you bring in the guy whose confidence was destroyed in the first game. But whatever. That's another issue. And you obviously don't like him. You're the coach. You're told to do what you like. And the same thing goes for Goretzka, again, carrying a knock, whatever. I think his size and his physicality could have made a difference off the bench.
Yeah.
What I question is, at that point in the game, you're 1-0 up. Are you really so arrogant that you think there's no way that they can get an equalizer? So I'm going to take off Kane and Musiala for Choupo-Moting. I mean, are we serious here?
And Müller, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess he wanted to keep kind of presence up top. So when you get rid of the ball, it's still, you know, you have Choupo-Moting that can hold the ball up. And
which Kane can't do?
Yeah, he can.
I mean, afterwards,
Kane had been running for 85 minutes. Musiala as well. They gave a lot. They defended a lot as well. The transition takes a lot of energy off you because obviously every time you recover the ball, the first thing you do is you sprint forward. So, I don't know. But yeah, I thought it was weird, especially in case he had to play another 30 minutes.
That's the main thing.
Time. Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, for sure. That's a fair point.
On the Real Madrid end, it's not obvious that you would bring on, obviously you are going to bring on Joselu and you know, when you're chasing the game at that stage, and Brahim Diaz to say, hey, why don't we attack down the right for one, since we've done nothing on that flank.
Yeah.
However, I don't think it was obvious. And what I love about this is we know people in football are superstitious, right? I don't think it's obvious at all to take off Rodrigo and Valverde the way he did. But maybe he didn't have too many other alternatives, right?
Yeah.
But Valverde, both those guys are people who scored huge late goals in the past, the recent past. Yeah. Both those guys are people who have energy, who you think in extra time, you know, I can maybe use them more than somebody else. Again, I think he read that part pretty well. And if this game goes into extra time, there's no doubt in my mind that Real Madrid win this. I mean, we agree on that, right?
Yeah, I think
once you've taken Kane and Musiala off.
Yeah, as well. Yeah, for sure. I mean, he wanted to go into 4-3-3. You see, when Brahim comes on, he says to everybody, it's 4-3-3 now. Obviously, José Lu would go into the number 9 position. So there was no space for Rodrigo and Valverde. Tchouaméni and Kroos have already come off, which is for Camavinga and Modric, which is, again, the normal substitution. So I had no issues with Valverde and Rodrigo coming off. Really, I just love the José Lu story. I mean, the guy is 34, he never played in the Champions League before. He's a massive Real Madrid fan. He's Dani Carvajal's brother-in-law.
He was relegated 4 times in his career.
Yeah, he's on loan, man, with a formula. He's the less talented of all their squads. And yet he's there, he scored those 2 incredible goals. He came on in the 81st minute. There was 9 minutes of added time, so he played 18 minutes. He touched the ball twice in the Bayern box.
It's 22 minutes, actually, because it actually went on for...
Even more after the 9 minutes, yeah.
It's 13 because of the goals.
Yeah, touched the ball twice in the Bayern box. That's the 2 goals. He had 2 shots, that's the 2 goals. He had 10 touches of the ball. Like, he did 2 passes. He had as many shots as passes in that game, and he wins them this semi-final. I just find it incredible. And, you know, it just at the end... I saw him in the Flash interview, and he was just like, I just cannot believe this is happening to me. Can you imagine you're 34, you're a Real Madrid fan since you were a kid, you went to the academy, it just didn't work out for you, nobody ever thought you were good enough for that team, and you've just sent them to a Champions League final again.
No, I think it's one of the many tremendous
incredible
subjects. I wanted to get you quickly on the goal that was disallowed, the Nacho Kimmich incident.
Mm.
My reading is that if Kimmich were a little taller, you know, this...
Yeah, it's chest. It might have been...
Because there's no question, it's one of those typical things where they're going in to wrestle.
Yeah.
Nacho should know better than he should realize this guy is short, I'm tall.
Yeah.
If I go and I need to push him low or find another way to get loose, do a swim move or something. But when I extend my arms like that, there's a good chance I'll either hit him in the face or it's happened in the throat.
Yeah, like a WWE.
As an aside of that, and I am not poking fun at Harry Kane, what was pretty remarkable, I don't know if you wouldn't have seen this unless you watched it afterwards on the television, right? So Kimmich goes down, right? And I don't think Kimmich is necessarily milking it. I think, you know, it is a shot. Like, it's a hard blow to the throat, right? And obviously all the Bayern players surround Marciniak and stuff, and Marciniak's telling like, guys, chill, this is why VAR exists.
Yeah.
By the way, and I put this out to all the people who hate VAR, who think the world would be so much better without VAR. You know, I think without VAR, this could have easily been missed, right?
Yeah,
you're putting all the onus on a referee who's only got one set of eyes and an assistant who, you know, has a very blocked view from the other side.
The other
right?
side, yeah.
What struck me is Kane's talking to him, and Kane is making this, the elbow gesture again and again.
Is it?
He's like, and he's saying like, and you can see his lips moving like, I saw it, right? Which is funny.
Yeah,
because, you did not see.
You saw
Nacho
elbow. You didn't see. Yeah, definitely.
It's football. I'm not having a go. I love Harry Kane. I think he's a gentleman and everything. But it was just very, very funny. Imagine. Marciniak's like, dude, chill. I think it helps Marciniak run these games, too, that he's bigger and stronger than everybody else on the pitch.
Yeah. He's not scared at all. Yeah. But you see, with Nacho's reaction, once the ball goes in, he knows straight away that he fouled Kimmich and that the goal is not going to stand.
Yeah, no, I thought it was pretty
obvious. You can see on his face.
Final point on Tuchel and the eternal story that is the Bayern coaching race. I mean, obviously, we talked about Hermann Tiger Gerland taking over with Thomas Muller as a player coach. They've already made it clear that even if Tuchel had won the Champions League, he would not have been back. Yeah. Where are they?
You know what? I'm not sure exactly in terms of negotiations where they are. We saw Herbert Heine the other day saying, don't worry, we will have a great appointment. You've been humiliated so far. It's a humiliation for a club like Bayern Munich of that size, of that pedigree, to have been like clearly turned down by so many managers that they don't even know what to do now. Because if you go down the Thomas Muller player coach, I mean, come on, this is ridiculous. And I really think he's been an embarrassment to them, for them. This, like, they thought it was a good idea to keep Tuchel so you could prepare for the post-Tuchel era and who you're going to take after. And look at where they are. They probably would have had more luck had they sacked Tuchel back in March or whenever when he announced.
Some of us suggested that once there's no point keeping a lame duck there.
As well. And then, obviously, because you need to act quickly to replace him, maybe you're more efficient. I don't know, because now it's dragged and dragged and dragged, and you've had a no and a no and a no and a no and a no, and now you're down to, what, your seventh pick, which is Ten Hag and the Tiger and Muller. I mean, come on. Don't you think for a club like that, it's embarrassing?
I mean, I wonder, Sebastian Hoeneß obviously extended his contract at Stuttgart.
Yeah.
I wonder if they aren't thinking, all right, let's put a big water line together.
Yeah.
And go and buy him out and say Stuttgart, release him.
My mind is probably the best thing they can do.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Bayern and Real Madrid, Jules. We got to do this. We got to go. We got to talk about Paris Saint-Germain.
That's okay, my friend. That's okay.
We were both there, losing at home to Borussia Dortmund. I'm going to lay out the Luis Enrique case.
Yeah.
And then you can say, is he right, and does it hurt less as a result?
Yeah.
He came out and he said Paris Saint-Germain were more deserving over the two legs because they had a far higher XG. I think it was more than three, and they hit the woodwork four times. Is he right?
Factually, he's right in terms of chances. And yeah, the expected goals is much higher than Dortmund over the two legs as well. If you don't take your chances at that level, you don't deserve to go through. If you gift an opposition a goal like they did on Tuesday, you don't deserve to go through. It's all it is. At some point, those games are decided on details, on how efficient you are in the two boxes, when you defend, when you attack. One team was very clinical and they were a bit lucky. Yeah, of course, when you say four times in the same half, by the way, by your woodwork and, you know, your post, your crossbar, you ride your luck a little bit. But I think they've earned that right, Dortmund. They were, again, magnificent, I thought, in terms of unity and playing with their heart and the way they defended. And PSG were far too predictable, so it was easier for them to defend. But if you can't take your chances at that level, you don't deserve to go through. It's simple as that.
I completely agree that with your interpretation. I think his interpretation is completely wrong. And I would say I was disappointed in Luis Enrique in, you know, he made a call by playing Gonzalo Ramos up front, center forward. I didn't think that worked out. I thought the first half, Paris Saint-Germain produced very little. And when you put out all your woodwork and XG and stuff like that, hey, that's great. How much of that came after Dortmund scored? And how much of that, you know, you're two times hitting the woodwork. Two of those are people just blasting the ball, from 30 yards out.
Mm.
You will create more chances because you've got much better players. I don't even want to pretend to start playing a combined 11 game between these two, right? Because it would be 8-3, 9-2, whatever. Maybe more, actually. And yes, Beraldo makes a mistake and he's young and whatever. That's, I mean, I think not just losing Hummels on the goal. I thought Beraldo was completely lackadaisical, as if he didn't understand the occasion on the night.
Well, like same against Barca in the first leg, to be fair, and that's why he didn't start the second leg. But Marquinhos should never have given away that corner. It's an easy pass to Donnarumma, a pass that you and I would make. I don't understand how Marquinhos cannot make that pass and give away a corner that is then very well taken by Rose. Beraldo's mistake. When you think that a few minutes before, Zaire Emery has the chance, really the biggest chance of all, is the one that Zaire Emery puts on the post. He's an 18-year-old, and then Beraldo, 20-year-old, make the mistake a few minutes later, and this is it. The game is gone after that. The atmosphere in the ground was still amazing.
But it was remarkable.
But you could tell that there was just no way back, I thought.
Just a word on the atmosphere. It was remarkable, both from the traveling Dortmund fans and also at Paris Saint-Germain, the Virage Autoy, kept it up throughout. And then applauded the players afterwards.
Yeah, incredible.
Which, had I been in there, I might not have applauded Lucho. And I say this as a big Lucho fan. What I find remarkable here about Borussia Dortmund, and I wrote a column about this, which was kind of contrasting. This is like a John Hughes film, right? Where you've got the pretty girl who everybody wants, who in this case is Mbappe, sorry for being portrayed as a woman, and this group of misfits, freaks, unwanteds, rejects, which is basically Borussia Dortmund right now, right? Madsen, unwanted by Chelsea. Sancho, unwanted by Manchester United. Sabitzer, unwanted by Bayern. That's why they're all there. And we can look at the reasons why. And yet they play, all three play such a big role in this. And it goes further, right? Süle, Hummels. These are people who are there because their clubs didn't want them anymore because they said you're too rubbish or you're too old. Even Füllkrug, unwanted by everybody until he was 29 years old. I mean, this is a story, right? This to me means something. Adeyemi, the guy who didn't score for like 9 months, you know, starts on one wing, and you have Sancho, who, if you listen to the United media, you know, is like the devil incarnate, and these guys come through and make a difference. And this is part of the great story, I think, of why this sport is special. But to go back to Luis Enrique, I'm sorry, before that, but to go back to the pretty girl who everybody wanted, I was really disappointed in Killian until the last half hour. And L'Equipe were even more disappointed. I don't like to talk about L'Equipe player rating, people make too much a deal out of it. But 2 out of 10 for his last Champions League game with Paris Saint-Germain, presumably. That's harsh, no?
Yeah, it is a bit harsh. Dembele had the 2 out of 10 because there was no end product in anything that he was trying to do. I don't know, I guess we saw Killian after the game and he said, you know, I should have done more, I didn't do enough. Almost saying that big players like him deliver usually those games, and he didn't. So in the end, he deserves, I think, what he got.
All right, Jules, just a few more minutes of discussing this.
But just on Killian, at least he came out and said, this is it's on me.
He Lucho took ownership.
Lucho said it the same. I don't know if it's more on Luis Enrique, more on Mbappe. But the old saying that big games belong to big players, blah, blah, blah. But again, we saw Vini with Real Madrid, for example. I know he didn't win it directly because Joselu won it. But you see what I mean? I think for PSG to have gone through, even if all of them were not very good first leg or second leg, to be fair, as a team, they lacked intensity. I thought they lacked energy, a bit of creativity. Apart from Vitinha, who was outstanding in both games, he was really the only one that played at his level.
Vitinha was exceptional.
What a player. Incredible. But for Killian, it will. And the thing is, 7 seasons, all we will probably remember, not all of it, but most of it, will be this semi-final, first leg, second leg, where you were so close to a final, which would have been a dream last game for him. And instead, it will be a massive failure.
I think we'll remember more than that. We'll probably also remember the final he failed to win.
True, but then again, he missed that big chance at 0-0. That shot that he aimed at Neuer, and then that was his chance as well to win that, or to at least make a big step toward winning it. So there's those key moments, especially in the Champions League, the semi-final against City, where he was not fair. The club is still saying that they're not too convinced he wasn't fair. So there's those moments, and unfortunately they happened a lot in the Champions League.
So this is the first time I saw Mbappe in person. And you know, when you watch on television, you often have a slightly different perspective. I get that with Deschamps in France and in the past, like, oh, look, we've lost possession. Okay, Killian, go stand between the center forwards and we'll worry about defending and we'll try to get the ball to use an outlet. I get that Deschamps does that because he's Deschamps and he's done fine doing that. Mm. But I kind of thought, Lucho, you're here because you're Luis Enrique. You're here because we heard of this whole, like, sort of more team-oriented situation and everything. And I was a bit surprised to the degree, especially in a game like this where you've got the adrenaline, the involvement. You know, when Paris Saint-Germain stepped onto the pitch, they were a goal down, right, from the first leg. So it felt like he, for a lot of the game, he was playing within himself, even off the ball, even, you know, a run back to help Nuno Mendes or whatever. Something like that can also fire up and can also galvanize. Mm. And when the other guys, yeah, Dembele put in a shift defensively. Ramos, I thought, was kind of impalpable when he was out there. And I just thought that on the situations when Dortmund attacked, it took Paris Saint-Germain far longer than it should have to have won the ball back. I mean, is...
Yeah, I think their pressing structure was not good. It was not good in the first leg when they had Dembele on Emre Can and Riasson on his own. Yeah, I don't think it was good in the second leg where Emre Can was a lot on his own because they changed it. And you had Ramos, Dembele and Mbappe in that first line of pressing. They got it.
Except
yeah,
it's
they
really
got it.
Just Ramos and Dembele in the first line of pressing.
Well, yeah, Killian had to go on to one of the centre-backs and Cobalt. But yeah, that's what Killian does. I mean, on Monday in his press conference, Luis Enrique said everybody has to defend, even your best player. He didn't name Mbappe, but yeah, it was clearly like even Mbappe has to defend.
When I saw Schlotterbeck hit a couple diagonals because he had all the time in the world, and it's obvious that if you look at that back line, who's the guy you're going to leave the ball to? It's going to be Schlotterbeck, right? It's not going to be Hummels because he can hit a pass certainly better than Schlotterbeck. Not that Schlotterbeck's terrible, but
yeah.
Right. But obviously, right, Ryerson can carry the ball. And I'm like, dude, there's two defenders. Mbappe, you're quick. At least you're going to stand near them. Like, shut it down, you know?
Mbappe can't shut down Schlotterbeck, though, because that's not his position. That's Gonzalo Ramos's.
But that's not what's happening. But I looked to me anyway that Ramos was dropping off and they were pressing there. And he was being left.
Yeah, there was Emre Can to take in consideration as well. I was surprised because 1-0 down. And I think 1-0 down is an interesting deficit to have, really, just to finish quickly, because you could go all guns blazing, and maybe that's what PSG and Luis Enrique should have done. So you go literally 1v1 everywhere on the pitch. So you let Füllkrug directly with Beraldo or Marquinhos. Marquinhos pushing to. So everybody has just a player. So there's no free player at all for Dortmund, but that's very risky, obviously, because if somebody's beaten, then
you have to be Atalanta away to at Anfield to do that.
You know, but you know, City do it, Arsenal do it, but can you do it at that level? I don't know. But then the problem is, if you don't do that, it feels like you don't really put any much intensity in, and that's certainly the feeling that we had, and I think the whole stadium and everybody even watching on television had, is that PSG were not really going for it when they were a goal down after the first leg. Maybe because they didn't want to take too many risks at the start, but then when do you take the risk? When do you, I don't know, that first half was weird, but they haven't been good in first half this season against Real Sociedad at home, against Bayern Munich at home, away at Dortmund in that first leg. I mean, even in the group stages of the Champions League. So first halves is not theirs, but I think it's a massive opportunity missed, because this Dortmund team deserve credit. Edin Terzic is great and he's a fan and he's lovely story again, but they were there for the taking. They're not an amazing team really, and PSG should, over two games with the second leg in Paris, PSG should have beaten them.
You mentioned Terzic there. He is a good story. He's also somebody who was on the verge of getting sacked like a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, who I think there's a strong case to make at the end of this season. You know, Dortmund are going to finish fifth, most likely. Yeah, they'll be in the Champions League, and they're in the Champions League final. But when you look at the job he's done this season, you look at what Dortmund have been, there's still a case, if you can get somebody better, it's time to move on, no? I mean, he's had a lot of time there.
Yeah, and they're not going to move him on. He's going to stay, surely.
Because they're going to make an emotional decision and go to the Champions League final.
No, because I think, no, because in a way, he's shown his credentials in the Champions League, no? Really. There's a lot of good things from the first game in the group stage against Paris, where he messed it up, to be fair. But after that, he corrected everything. And they were good. They rode their luck a little bit in the Milan games, to be fair. But
in the first leg, I think. In the second leg, not so much.
Yeah. But certainly in Milan, where they were outplayed, outshot, out-expected, out everything, and they still managed to get a draw that helped them massively.
That was in Dortmund.
Yeah.
That was in Dortmund. In Milan, they won. But yeah. No, I take your point. But it's just...
The league is different.
But the league is what you measure, because you play against everybody else and you look for progress. And when I look at this, when I ask myself, which of these players has improved? Which of these players, you know, I'm like, obviously Daniel Malin wasn't there, whatever. You could argue he has improved this season, right?
Mm.
Adeyemi, with a run he had of not scoring and in and out. Sebastian Haller is obviously not in the picture. You know, you take Sabitzer on loan. Sean is older. I'm thinking to myself, what are we building towards? Where you had three players on loan in that lineup. Okay, Mattsson you can hope to keep, maybe. Maybe you can even keep Sabitzer. Sancho, I don't know. But it just seems so patchwork, so haphazard. And this is the team, which is second biggest team in Germany. So it's not all on Terzic.
Mm.
But look, I think I agree with you. I think he will stick around. But I think he needs to progress. Final point. I love this from Mats Hummels. He's like, well, after the group stage, everybody described us as the team that everyone wanted to play against. Yeah. So we're being kind, because by staying in this competition, we give more teams the opportunity to play against us. I thought.
It's brilliant. I mean, his social media is really good. If you remember the Farmers League one, after they qualified for the semifinal as well. So yeah.
Yeah. I don't, whether it's him
a nice guy,
or whether he's got a guy doing it for him, doesn't matter. But we're all Team Hummels here. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Dortmund. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
This was way back on Monday, but also way shocking, at least to me. Manchester United, maybe not to you, Jules. Manchester United get thumped 4-0 away by Crystal Palace. Jules, are you going to be mean about Erik ten Hag again? Or are you going to give him a pass because he had a dozen or so players unavailable?
They were shambles. They were really shambolic. Their medical staff is a shambles. Their list of injury players is a shambles. Ten Hag is a shambles. Everything is so bad at that club. I think it's one of the worst coach team in the Premier League, even with their starting lineup, even with their subs. I do not care. When you see some of their individual performance of that game on Monday, but also collectively as a unit of everything not to do, they did. In a game where Palace were good, obviously, Eze, Olise, Mateta, especially the front three, which we mentioned on Monday on the show, just destroy them completely. It's embarrassing if you're United.
And you're not even having a go at Casemiro.
But Casemiro, he's not a centre-back, doesn't want to play there. So already, I don't think he would be a good job in his own position. Let alone in a position where he doesn't want to play in and doesn't want to be there.
But
so yeah, of course he was bad. But
if you analyse, you will see. Yeah, okay.
I mean, there's no way they can keep him. There's no way they're going to finish the lowest they've ever finished in the Premier League history. Like, come on.
Good transition for the next question.
Yeah, and our colleague Rob Dawson, Gab, reports that Manchester United won't rush any decision on Ten Hag's future and that they will make a decision after the FA Cup final on May 25th. I mean, it's good because by then they might not have won another single game this season. So,
yeah, and they have a pretty tricky run in too.
Yeah, well. Arsenal on Sunday, for example.
Yeah, look, frankly, I think you should, you don't want to call it rushing into it. You should have a decision now. You should make a decision. It cannot depend on the last three games of the season, the FA Cup final. It should never depend on results at the end. It should depend, how do you assess the situation? How much are the injuries a mitigating factor? Can you get somebody better than Ten Hag? And whatever else. If you're just sitting there with their, you know, with their buttocks covering their hands and saying, well, we don't want to make any noise to destabilize Ten Hag. We're not going to talk to other people because it's going to get out. I don't know. I think Ten Hag is a grown-up. Yeah. I would just be honest with him and say, listen, we haven't decided yet if we're going to keep you, but we're going to talk to other people, and then you may be back. And if you don't like it, you know, stuff it. You got a contract. Yeah. Works both ways. Vitor Roque's agent, Andre Kouri, is reportedly unhappy at his client's playing time. He says he's not going on loan, and that if they're not going to play him, they should sell him.
Oh,
does he have a point, Jules?
I mean, it's hard to tell because we don't see him at training every day. I don't know if Xavi... He also said Xavi never speaks to Vitor Roque, that they turned down much more money from other clubs to go to Barcelona because his dream was to play for Barcelona.
Other imaginary clubs.
Yeah, I don't know who they were. He doesn't mention. When he came on, he scored a couple of goals, never looked that impressive. He's still a young player that just come from Brazil that needs to adapt to Europe and La Liga and Barcelona and European football, all of that, which we know... Even in the statement, they took the example of Vinicius, saying, oh, it took Vinicius 2.5 years, but now look at him. Well, yeah, so he might take Vitor Roque 2 years as well to get to a really good level where he can start every week for Barcelona and be a good player. Right now, I don't think he's ready. Otherwise, Xavi would play him. Xavi is not stupid.
I think at this stage, if I were Barcelona, I would, or if I were Xavi, I would say, hey, Robbie, go rest up for the summer. And I would give Vitor Roque a chance. I mean, as a club, I would want to say, let's see you out there. Let's see what you can do in these last few games. We've got nothing left to play for.
Mm-hmm.
And not to make Andre Kouri happy, but just because it's in the club's interest to see how does he actually fare when he's out there. They spent a ton of money on him, and they have a decision to make on Lewandowski. I mean, it would be stupid not to do that.
Mm. A late Beltran penalty gives Fiorentina a 1-1 draw away at Bruges, which is enough to qualify them for the Europa Conference League final. Gab, the second in a row.
Second in year, last time they did not win it, but unlucky against West Ham. Yeah. I thought if they win it and if Atalanta or Roma win the Europa League, hey, look, Serie A could have nine teams
in
Europe next season, six in the Champions League. Depending where they finish in the league. Look, I thought Fiorentina were really good in this game. You know the whole thing about Luis Enrique crying about all the times he hit the woodwork? Fiorentina hit the woodwork three times in this game. Not even Mr. Champions League, Hans van Aken, our favorite players,
scored in the first leg,
could stop them. I'm happy for them. I'm happy for their fan base. And they'll face the winner of Aston Villa and Olympiacos, who, of course, beat Villa 4-2 in the first leg.
Mm.
Olympiacos coached by José Luis Mendilibar.
Of course. Who
Mr. Old School.
Who won the Europa League before.
The Times report that Ange Postecoglou wants a new striker, a new centre-back, and a new midfielder. In addition to all the players like Højbjerg and stuff who we know they're going to try to get rid of.
Yeah.
He's even willing to sacrifice Yves Bissouma and Richarlison, if necessary, if they need to raise funds, to pay for a new striker, centre-back, and midfielder. Are you on board with those three positions? And
yeah, I mean, the other day on the FC show, we discussed it, and I thought that's probably where, certainly striker and midfielder, and I thought probably two, even maybe three midfielders, he would want centre-back. No, but centre-back, you've got Romero, Van de Ven, Dragusin, you've already bought two.
You just bought, yeah.
Yeah, Dragusin in January, Van de Ven last summer.
You don't need, I don't understand, that really surprised me. What
yeah,
you another guy?
A fourth one? Maybe with a different profile, but again, it looked like you've got all different profiles already in the three very good ones that you have. Maybe you need a fourth in midfield. And we mentioned the incident in the Chelsea game where he was telling his players to play forwards, clearly aimed at his midfielders, and clearly aimed at probably Bissouma and Saar. Yeah, I can see why. For Richarlison, he clearly had an impact when he came on in the Liverpool game, and maybe as an impact sub is good, but they definitely need a number nine. Kane hasn't been replaced. They signed Werner on loan in January and Brendan Johnson in the summer to kind of replace Kane in a way, which is not enough. So yeah, for nine, no problem. In midfield, I think as well. Centre back, I'm like you, I'm not too sure. And more from the Times, Gabby, as well, who said that Chelsea will have a difficult time complying with the UEFA's football earning rules. So, like, their financial fair play.
It's a new version of financial fair play, yeah.
How bad is it for Chelsea, Gabby?
So, the rules say you're allowed to lose 40 million over two seasons. They lost close to 100 million last year. Now, some of that doesn't count because it's not included in the calculations, but that's last year alone. This year, of course, they don't have any Champions League income. They think that they squeezed through the Premier League rules because of that sale of the hotel for the two hotels for 78 million. But that deal is being scrutinized by the Premier League, and it's going to be scrutinized by UEFA as well. Is it fair market value? Because it's with a related party. So it's on the bubble. I have a sense this might end up with a fine or a squad reduction if they are found to be in breach. Referee Daniele Orsato was in tears after Paris Saint-Germain's defeat to Borussia Dortmund. Jules, I'm guessing it wasn't because he's a big Mbappe fan or out of solidarity with you.
Yeah, maybe or my children who were also crying after the defeat. No, because it was his last ever Champions League game as a referee. And I think he got really emotional. It's the semi-final. He's not obviously going to the final. He knows that already. Otherwise, he wouldn't have cried. It's a bit awkward. We both really like him.
Yeah,
he's a top referee, and he finished on a high, I thought, with his performance on Tuesday night at the Parc des Princes. A court in Spain has confirmed that Luis Rubiales will stand trial in the Gianni Hermoso case. Remember, he faces charges of sexual assault and coercion, with George Vilda, Albert Luque and Ruben Rivera facing less charges for pressuring Hermoso at the time of the infamous kiss. What do you
think? The three of them are charged as being part of the cover-up, which you change your statement. Look, I think this case has drawn so much publicity. We need a definitive up or down. And Rubiales' defense, this stuff happened in the past. Not good enough. It's good. Let's get all the evidence out there and let them decide. Let's go back to Monday night and our friend John Texter. Get well soon, John. His Lyon side put together quite the comeback against Lille. He must have been
incredible. The seventh game, Gabby, since the turn of the year that they come back like that. There was one against Brest. There was one against Monaco. This one against Lille. They were 2-0 down at halftime. Then he came back to 2-2. They were 3-2 down with a few minutes to go. And they managed to win, to come back to 3-3, to come back to... to come back and to win late as well. Just incredible, incredible character, Lacazette and all his boys. Well done to them. Nottingham Forest's appeal against their four-point penalty has been rejected. Gab, will they still stay up?
Looking at this run-in, I think so. Because, they have Chelsea at home and then Burnley away. You don't want to... Burnley could be down by that point because...
They go to Spurs,
although given the way Spurs have played late, who knows? Look, I think it was kind of obvious that their appeal was going to be rejected. When they laid out the first time why they rejected it, it's not like anything's changed since then. So, but I don't think it's going to matter. I think they're staying up. Marco Reus will be leaving Dortmund and has reportedly already had talks with Major League Soccer clubs. St. Louis, I think, was one.
Yeah, St. Louis, I think, is the one.
Good solution?
I like this. I think we saw him playing a little bit on Tuesday. He still, I think, has legs and talent to offer. And it's not going to go to another German club, really. I don't think after all his time in the Bundesliga, there's something there for him. So MLS is probably a good option. If again, he brings something to whatever team and franchise he joins, that he's still up for it, that he's motivated, that we see the talent. If he's to go on holidays, just retire.
It's
and not don't
holidays.
Bother.
And St. Louis is a good option, right? There's a good barbecue, the Gateway Arch, the Cardinals.
I've never been to St. Louis, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Good for him then, yeah. More work for Everton. A fan group has urged the owner, Farhad Moshiri, to ditch the 7-7-7 deal, Gab. But what happens if he does?
Well, there's strong suggestions that he will. He doesn't really have much of a choice because I think he's kind of understanding that this deal might never come to pass, given that 7-7 are now being sued for fraud in a New York court by a company called Leadenhall Capital. They say that they, when they loan them money, you have to put assets kind of in as a guarantee against them, borrow against their value. They say that they... They either pledged assets that they'd already pledged to secure loans in other places, or assets that simply did not exist, which is another way to do that. It's a really rough situation to be in, obviously. And it's weird because obviously, you know, Red Star promoted, although I believe they're for sale now as well.
Yeah, and their manager is leaving because of all the uncertainty around 777.
The thing here for Moshiri is if he acts as 777 deal, he's on the hook for the money. And of course, all that money was definitely Moshiri's and not anybody else. Certainly not somebody whose last name might start with a U and end with an Ov and be Zman in between. But anyway, he gets angry when people think that he's not a billionaire. But obviously, I would only assume that he would drop this when he's got another buyer lined up.
Yeah.
Only thing with that one is if I'm another potential buyer who wants to own Everton, and look, obviously a historic club, the stadium, all the stuff, at the right price, it makes sense. I will have followed this whole thing and maybe know that, wait, they're kind of really, really up against it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to negotiate really, really hard to get this at the best possible price, not because I'm a bad guy, but because, you know, if money that I don't spend to give to Moshiri and maybe his friend, who might be under sanction, is money that I can invest in the club, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a difficult thing. I mean, whatever way, I would say it's going to cost Moshiri a lot of money, but I'm not sure it's his money to begin with. So I'll just leave it there. Yeah, I'm sure it's definitely his money.
Such a mess.
All of it.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A. member FDIC.
Porto coach Sergio Conceição is meeting new president André Villas-Boas over his future. Jules, he's been strongly linked to Milan after fans torpedoed Julian Lopetegui.
Yeah, as we explained on Monday, if you're Villas-Boas and you're the new president, maybe you want to come with your own guy, which, okay, I could understand maybe, but also Conceição has been so good to Porto in the last few years. Okay, this season in the league, not so much. They've made mistakes. They had some highs and some lows, but they almost knocked out Arsenal. They were very close to knocking out Arsenal out of the Champions League in the last 16. I would keep Conceição. I'm not sure where they could go to find someone better if Conceição goes, but he might want to go and just have another chapter in his career and maybe go back to Italy, where he obviously played for many, many years.
Well, I'm assuming he's also, what I say, with greatest respect to Porto, probably a bigger club.
A bigger club, yeah, true.
Definitely more money.
Yeah.
So I think it's the kind of conversation where AVB will say, okay, well, if you stay, and we want, you know, if AVB, assuming AVB wants to stay, this is how we're going to, these are the plans, this is what we can spend, these are our budgets. I'm assuming AVP has reviewed everything Pinto da Costa did and has a plan. So yeah. I think it's gonna hinge on that. I think from Milan's perspective, I hope that Conceição is the name they all agree on and that it's not another situation where Lopetegui, where there was like one guy wanted him, another guy wants Van Bommel, another guy wants Fonseca. You know, it's not a good look.
It's not a good look at all. You're right. And sticking with Milan, their current coach, Stefano Pioli, is now reportedly top of Napoli's list. As we know, they will also be looking for a manager in the summer.
Yeah, and look, I think kind of with Arrigo Sacchi on this, as you know, and I've said this before, if you can't get somebody who's markedly better, and I think Fonseca could be, keep Pioli. You know, just ignore the boo birds and the people keep giving him stick.
Yeah.
If you decide it is time to move on, I think he'd make a lot of sense for Napoli. You know, he does come with a pedigree of having won the title. I think he's a very good coach. Can he deal with Aurelio De Laurentiis? Probably better than others. So, I think it makes a lot of sense. Certainly more sense than all those people who are prattling on about Antonio Conte and whatever else. That ship has sailed.
Yeah.
Bayer Leverkusen kick off in a few hours against Roma in the Europa League. But Jules, their social media team is under attack for a post which detailed tickets, which had all the ticketing details for the final, which is going to be played in Dublin. Now, I know they're 2-0 up from the first leg away, and I know that they corrected it pretty quickly after they posted this. Karma is real.
Well, I know, but I don't know. Real Madrid had their shirt already ready in case they qualified for the final. Dortmund had T-shirt ready in case they qualified for the final.
You but you keep those T-shirts hidden away.
But you know they're there, though, Gab. Maybe you keep them away, hidden, but you know they're there. They've made them. They paid for them. It's there. So, of course, they're all making plans. Roma making plans for the final in case they turn this around. Everybody makes
plans.
You
don't share them in public. You keep them hidden away.
So what? You turn it up. It's more likely that you're going to make it to the final than not. So, I don't know. Maybe don't make it so public. I don't really have an issue with planning for a potential final when you're that close. Marseille, Atalanta are going to do the same.
No, but of course they're planning. The question is releasing the tickets.
No.
By the way, what you mentioned there about kind of the shirts for Real Madrid, you know, por la quinceañera or whatever. It's funny. I read a piece a few years ago about this guy who, because you always wonder, you always see this, especially, I think it's started in American sports, where, like, you know, somebody becomes NBA champion or wins the Super Bowl, and immediately they're all running around with the hats and the T-shirts, right? So there's a company that makes them, and obviously they make a whole separate set because they don't know who's going to win, right? And those are the ones that we never see. So I read a piece, a guy traveled, those shirts get, that whole material gets donated. There's a specific town, I forget if it's in Ghana or somewhere in West Africa, where these T-shirts later get donated. And if you go there, there's an alternate universe where there's a completely different set of winners. You know, like France 2022, World Cup champions, and, you know, England Euro 2020. It must be the most surreal experience. I want to go there. I want our bosses to send us there.
Yeah, that's great story. Weston McKennie has 1 year left on his contract at Juventus, but has reportedly rejected the club's offer for an extension.
Okay, so I got it. People have asked me about McKennie, right? A lot of U.S. national team players. And because there's that stat, which it even came up when we had our editorial meeting with our colleagues in the U.S. and the guys who follow U.S. national team, they're like, well, Weston McKennie's got the third most minutes for Juventus this season, right? So he has played a lot for Juventus this season. I think he's played relatively well.
Yeah, he's
been
okay. I think
they like his versatility. But here's the thing. He's got a year left on his contract. Juventus have offered him a new contract, but it's a pay cut from what he's making now. Right now, he's reportedly making 2.5 million euros net, which is about, I don't know, close to what, $4.5 million a year gross. Maybe a little more than that. But they're offering him to cut his wages.
Right.
Not by a lot, but in longer term, you'll for lower wages. Whereas he was thinking he was going to get $3 million a year net.
So it's a
right. Like Manuel Locatelli.
Yeah.
I think the harsh truth is part of the reason McKennie's played so much is that Pogba and Nicolò Fagioli were both suspended.
Yeah.
To me, this is the kind of contract renewal which says, hey, why don't you have a really, really good Copa America and we sell you somewhere in the Premier League, you know, and cash in. Because you view him as a saleable asset. That's, I think, the harsh reality.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And look, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. He's worked hard and whatever. But right now, the club's financial situation is such that they're minding every penny. Three high-profile footballers have been attacked in Malaysia, Jules, and they've been urged to hire bodyguards. The charity shield of the Malaysian League was cancelled after Selangor pulled out.
Yeah.
This is worrying and a bizarre story about who's doing this.
Very weird. Almost back-to-back attacks as well. One, two men smashing the window of his car when he was in it.
This was Safiq Rahim of JDT.
Akia Rashid was
also attacked, JDT, of course.
Yeah, attacked outside his home.
The worst one was Selangor's Faisal Halim.
Yeah, who was attacked with acid. So he had burns on
fourth-degree burns. He's been hospitalized.
Which is terrible. And we don't know who's behind these horrible attacks. What's happening? Is he a rival fans or ultra or something like that? There's just a big investigation going on right now in Malaysia. But it's quite scary especially if you're a JDT player.
Well, or a Selangor player in this case. I think also in the case of Faisal Halim, you may remember him. You can go on YouTube and check this out just to say, you can say, all right, it's a Malaysian league. Why should I care? But he scored the goal of the tournament at the Asian Cup. I don't know if you remember this.
Against Rabona.
So... It's a horrid story, and you just hope that there's some clarity that comes out of this.
Gianni Infantino is still in the US. We mentioned him on Monday already, and he has criticized the pay-to-play system that exists in the United States. Gab, what's he talking about?
So I think he's talking about two things here. First of all, as most people know, in the US, because there isn't a pyramid system like there is here, and in many cases, when kids join clubs at a young age, those clubs aren't affiliated to senior clubs, and so they don't, you know, if the player grows and develops, the player's not going to be moved on for a transfer fee, for example. And so as a result, clubs are like, well, how do I pay for all these kids, the bibs and whatever? I know, I'm going to charge the parents.
Yeah.
And there's been criticism of that, because obviously if you can't afford it, you can't do it. And he talked about how, well, why don't we have these clubs be community clubs, and, you know, maybe they can have local sponsors. He talked about his football club where he's from in Brig,
right,
in the Alps, about how, like, you know, a local lawyer donates the shoes for the whole team. And he's getting way granular in this. I think as a point, it's been a big point of debate in the US
for a long time. Absolutely.
Some people say it really slows down the system because what you often get is on some even very competitive youth teams, those youth teams offer scholarships to the kids who can't play, but then you always have a couple kids who you look at them and like, yeah, you're kind of rubbish, but then it's because their families are the ones who pay full fat, right? I think the other thing is he's really made it a priority to make sure that everybody pays into the FIFA training compensation scheme. So as you know, when players move up until a certain age, a certain percentage of the transfer fee then goes back to the clubs that train them, I think, from the age of 12.
Yeah.
There's both solidarity payments and FIFA, two separate schemes. And a lot of times that's not paid. And in the U.S., especially many clubs that are not affiliated to a certain structure, they just never see that money back. So I think that's what he's pushing at. But, I mean, we're talking about youth development.
Yeah.
It's a broader topic, but it does make a big difference, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think it also ensures that players can play against kids of higher ability, which is how you get better.
Yeah, and also you don't miss out on talent because everybody can join now, which right now is still limited to the ones who have the money.
Yeah, or who happen to be near an MLS academy and get spotted. But there's only, 32 of those?
Yeah.
The napkin, which famously brought Lionel Messi to Barcelona 24 years ago, is up for auction. Jules, bidding starts at 300,000 euros.
Wow. Yeah. I think it would go so much higher.
Tell
than
the
that.
Story of the napkin. I mean, younger listeners might not know this.
Yeah, back in December 2000, when Lionel Messi was, really, really young, and at the time, Carles Rechak, do you remember, was there?
Yes.
He was a sporting director, but he'd been a coach, he'd been a player, like everything. He was a big thing in Barcelona. But yeah, in that restaurant, when they agreed with Messi and his dad and everybody that he would come to the club, they had no paper because they I guess, were unprepared, which is never good to be unprepared before a meeting, as we know. So just found this napkin and just put the names and just say, like, we agree under the responsibility and regardless of any dissenting opinions to sign the player Lionel Messi, provided that we keep to the amounts agreed upon.
Yeah. And a few hours later, the lawyers...
history.
Yeah, a few hours later, the lawyers filed a former contract. This is it. This is not
imagine
a bad deal.
Imagine having that in a frame in your living room. That's pretty cool.
I bet you could sell this back to Messi.
God, yeah. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Messi should buy it and give it to the Barca Museum. That's the idea.
Yeah.
And also, it would help, you know, give them a bit more money.
Or you could donate it, if you wanted to troll him, you could donate it to the Ronaldo Museum.
Gab, why is the Phoenix Trophy and why should fans care? And why are we caring about it? Why is
we
it in
care
there?
About it because it's coming up this weekend. Our colleague Tony Maybert's going out. He's going to write a story about it.
Okay.
It's near Lake Garda, which is beautiful. It was founded by Brera, which is the third or fourth team from Milan, although they founded this trophy, but I don't think they ever actually played in it. It's a trophy for fan-owned amateur clubs.
Okay, so non-league. We don't play in like a professional league.
Well, as long as the players are amateur. And it's going to be played this weekend, dominated by English clubs. It's Enfield Town, the Prague Raptors,
Wow.
Luz FC, and then the one which I think most people are going to be familiar with, FC United of Manchester, of the Phoenix Club that was founded by those United fans who said, screw this, we don't want the Glazers.
Yeah.
By the way, FC United of Manchester, they get, I'm not familiar with the other ones.
They get serious crowds.
Yeah, yeah. But Enfield Town, that's your neck of the woods.
Yeah, it's not far. They're doing well. They're in the 7th or 8th division. They've got a decent crowd as well, come in. It's a decent
I'm surprised
stadium.
You're not going this weekend.
Yeah, sorry, guys. Next year, maybe. There's always next year.
Jules, that brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Monday because there's still a major title race in the Premier League, other major leagues, somewhat decided.
Yeah.
And, of course, a big relegation battle as well. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.